Parshas Emor, Tavshin Ayin Ches. And we will begin on page 674, which is Perek Chaf Aleph, Pasek Tes Zayin. Pasuk Tazayin. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lemar, and Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, so just one second. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe Lemar. Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, Daber al Aaron Lemar, speak to Aaron saying, Ish mizaracha, a man from your children, L'doyrei some for all generations, Ashiya baimum, that will have a blemish, a physical blemish, Lo yikrav, he shall not approach, L'hakriv lechem aleikav, to bring the bread of his God, meaning to offer a sacrifice. Ki chol ish asher baimum lo yikrav, for every man that has a blemish shall not offer. Ish iver, oi pesach, oi charum, oi sarua. Someone blind, someone lame, etc. And the Torah then goes through the physical blemishes. Now, let's look closely at Pasuk Yud Zayin and Pasuk Yud Ches. It said, Ish mizaracha l'doraisam, a man from your children for their generations, shiyeh b'imum, that will have a blemish, lo yikrav l'hakrim lechem aleikav, shall not approach to bring the bread of his God. Okay, so that means don't bring a carbon. Ki chal ish asher b'imum lo yikrav, because every man that has a blemish shall not come close. Did we just say that? We just said that. So what exactly is, and if a key is supposed to be a reason, well, where's the reason? It just sounds again like don't do it. So we have to take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, this is Pasuk Tes Zayin. Rashi says, about Pasuk Yerches, I'm sorry, the top Rashi on the left column, Ki chol ish asher b'imum lo yikrav, for every, because any man that has a blemish shall not approach. What does that mean, shall not approach? Ein noidin sheyakriv. It's not appropriate that he approach. Kamo yakriveu nolafechasecha, like we find in a pasuk, will you bring it to your officer? Now, what that means is like this. This pasuk of Malachi is where the Navi is chastising the Jewish people for bringing blemished sacrifices. Or actually, think that the Kohanim were bringing blemished sacrifices in the Beis HaMikdash. So the Navi says to them, hakriveu nolafechasecha, would you offer this to your officer? If you had to go out and honor a flesh and blood nobleman, would you bring him such a blemished thing? So if you're doing, if you wouldn't bring such a blemished thing to a flesh and blood officer, how do you bring it to Hashem? Now, we're not talking about the animal here right now, we're talking about the person. But it's the same idea. You know, if you want to send someone as an emissary to bring a gift to a king or to a high officer, you don't typically send the guy who's like missing an eye, or like he has a major limp, or he has some kind of major deformity. That's not who you send. And therefore, the pasuk is saying here also, the kohen that has these physical blemishes, it falls into the same category. Where you go ahead and send such a person in front of a king, in front of someone of high stature that you're trying to give a gift to. So therefore, the pasuk here that seems to be repeating, because every man that has a blemish shall not offer, needs to be translated as following. The pasuk before says, he shall not approach to bring a sacrifice. because every person has a mum that has a blemish, lo yikrab, it's not appropriate, it's not proper that he bring a sacrifice. Because he's blemished, it's not proper. The same way the blemished person wouldn't be presenting the gift to the nobleman, to the king, here too, the blemished kohen would not be bringing the gift to Hashem. Now, the Chizkuni, in his commentary, says it it's the same idea as Rashi, but it just brings, he says it in a little bit of a different way. He adds a word or two. Just have to find it. Here we are. Ki cholish, because every man. Nesinas tamu, this is an explanation, this is giving a reason. V'chein perushai, and this is the explanation. Da kol ish asher boi mum, because any person that has a blemish, ein nire noe sheyakriv. It does not appear appropriate or pleasant that he be bringing it. Okay? There is something about the fact that if the person presenting the sacrifice is blemished, that it's not appropriate. It doesn't appear proper. It doesn't appear nice. Now, I hope I'm not going to get myself in trouble for saying any of this. However, However, this does not sound very PC. Okay, in our day and age, that we have so much, that we're trying so much to help people that are handicapped, that have any kind of physical or mental deformity, and we're trying to give them equal rights and treat them equally, and rightfully so, because clearly they have been mistreated for so long. It seems a little bit odd here that the Torah is actually disqualifying a person from being a Kohen because he's got a blemish. And the problem is, it's not appropriate. It doesn't look right. You know, you wouldn't send that in front of an officer, would you? And somebody would answer, I certainly would. There should be no differentiation made. Who cares if the person has this kind of a blemish? What difference should that make? But the Torah seems to be saying, according to these explanations, that there is something about it. Now let me read to you something here from Rav Moshe Feinstein. Again, on this same pasuk, Pirush Rashi, Rav Moshe cites Rashi, Shunasinas Tam, Amasha Kasud, Bapasuk Rishain, Shabal Mum, Pasalahakriv. This is an explanation. The Torah is explaining that which was written before, that the person with the blemish is invalidated from being a sacrifice. Shuhumi Tam, the reason for this is, She'ena B'din Shayakriv, it's not appropriate that he offer, like we find, would you offer this to your officer? So Rav Moshe says, it appears to say about this, you don't usually find the Torah giving reasons. And here, according to Rashi, the Torah is giving a reason. Why doesn't the blemished Kohen bring a sacrifice? Because it's not appropriate. But the mere idea that the Torah is giving a reason is odd, because the Torah doesn't usually give reasons for the prohibitions. Says Reb Moshe, the question here is, the Torah is coming to explain something. We find that Hashem says, the attribute of Hashem is that he says, Al Zeh Abid, I look to this. What do I look at? El Oni Unachay Ruach, the impoverished and lowly of spirit. The Estaka Yushva Ruach Eshkan, I dwell amongst those that are downtrodden and lowly of spirit. So now we have a question. If the Torah looks at if God says, I look at the downtrodden, I pay attention to the downtrodden. So why is the Torah now excluding, if Hashem looks at the downtrodden, he loves the downtrodden, why is he now excluding someone like that from doing the service? Therefore the Torah came to say, it's still not appropriate. Because would you bring it to your officer? Because this person still needs to appear pleasant and proper from the point of people. There is something here, says Rav Moshe, about the fact that the Kohen does the Avodah has to appear appropriate in the eyes of all people. I think what this means is, and again, I'm being recorded. I hope I don't get myself in trouble. And that is that at the end of the day, as much as we try to do the right thing, and we try to make sure everybody is treated equally, there is a certain human reaction that comes when there's a certain interaction with people who are blemished. Just the way it is. Sometimes just subconscious. It just happens that way. People, as much as they will try to go ahead and do the right thing and treat them properly, they should treat them properly. At the same time, there is this reaction by some people stronger, by some people less, of a certain discomfort or a certain looking at it as not that this doesn't look right. It doesn't look right. You don't give a blemished thing to the king. You don't present a blemished thing to the king. Now, yes, we should all do the right thing. We should all look at this person in the right way. But at the end of the day, he's damaged. And there's going to be a reaction in people's eyes, whether it's a real reaction, a subconscious reaction, a reaction deep down that says, this is missing something. This presentation is missing something. The presentation to the king should be 100%. And even if you know the right thing is to look at this person 100%, by some people, or maybe by all of us in some way or another, we're just not going to feel that it's the right thing. And if you don't feel it's the right thing, then at the end of the day, it creates a certain loss of respect for what's happening. It shouldn't be that way. Maybe it's not right to be that way, but at the end of the day, it is that way. It's the way at least some people react. Or subconsciously we have a certain reaction to it. And therefore the Torah is saying that when you're dealing with the Kohen, who is doing something as important as bringing a sacrifice to Hashem, it's got to be done in a way that it is pleasant and comfortable and completely respectful in the eyes of people. And whether we like it or not, sometimes there are going to be people out there. I mean, we're not talking about necessarily the mean people who are really mean about it. But I think what it means is that there is some kind of reaction, whether it be for some people a strong reaction, may not be right, but it's a strong reaction, or it's a subconscious reaction that something that is blemished is just doesn't appear to be the proper thing to approach a king with. So it's not that we're saying in truth they are second degree. We're not trying to go ahead and say that they're not beloved by Hashem. Hashem says the downtrodden are beloved by Hashem. The weak are beloved by Hashem. But at the same time, when we're dealing with the sacrifices have to be done in a way that is most honorable and respected and felt respected by everyone. And if there are some people who will feel that there's something lacking here, and therefore have a certain feeling of lack of respect here, that is a problem, and that is what the Torah is trying to deter. And Rav Moshe says, "V'yesh l'malof mizeh, shnei devarim." We should learn from this two things. Lefayis ulahazber lamisha yeshloi taina. You know what? If somebody comes with a complaint and a question, like, why is this going on? Don't ignore them, answer them. That's what the Torah is doing here. There's going to be people out there that say to themselves, Hashem looks at the downtrodden. Hashem loves the downtrodden. So what's going on here? Why are we being treated like this? Doesn't Hashem love me as much as everybody else? You've got to explain it. The Torah went out of its way to explain a prohibition here, something it typically doesn't do. Why did it do it? Because the Torah wanted to answer this thing that's on these people's hearts. Why am I being treated this way? And the Torah went out to explain it. And therefore, if we find ourselves in that kind of a situation, we shouldn't just brush it off. We should work to explain and make the person feel more comfortable. Then he says, "V'shama she'omer b'nei adam she'enoi chashivus." That which people say is not important, sometimes you do have to take it into account. I'm not sure what he means by that exactly. When he says, things that people say aren't important, you got to consider it important. Seems to me that what he's saying is that when people say, oh, the blemish doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. No. Don't assume that. Don't brush it off so fast it doesn't matter. It could matter. Now, again, we have to always bear in mind that when we're talking about caring what people think, right, the first halach in Shulchan Aruch says that if somebody makes fun of you doing a mitzvah, right, if somebody looks at you, right, you're doing a mitzvah like you're crazy, you just do it. You realize who you look good in the eyes of. Don't worry about what people say. Clearly, there's a lot. We're constantly told not to be focused on what people think or what people say. But there are times, but again, that's if somebody is going to try to deter you from doing what you're supposed to do. Don't be deterred from what you're supposed to do when someone is looking badly at it. Do it anyway. Don't worry about that. But here the Torah is talking about where there's a situation where the Torah is saying, look, there is an issue here. There's a question of doing the mitzvah, bringing the karma the most honorable and respected way. And in that sense, we do have to keep in mind what people might think or how people might look at it. That's what the Torah is saying. You know, life is nuanced. It's not across the board everything. There are times where we have to be aware of what people, be concerned with what people think, and there are times that we don't. There's no across the board rule, yes or no. It's either all or nothing. It's not all or nothing. Right? Our lives are nuanced. The Torah is nuanced in how to deal with things. And clearly, when you're dealing with this person who is crippled, this person who is blemished, in no way do you want him to feel not loved. Hashem loves him. We love him. At the same time, the Torah is still saying he can't do the service because the service has to be done in the most respected way in the eyes of everyone.
But this is more than hurting their feelings because bringing carbon, I assume, brings some benefit to the person who does that. Right? Benefit in a spiritual sense that they...
Yeah.
So they lose out on that as well.
Yeah, it's all... That's all part of what can be hurtful, and that's all part of what you have to at the same time say. But this is the way it needs to be.
For Yom Kippur or anytime?
Anytime. Okay. Now... I want to share with you Rav Hirsch's explanation about the blemished person. And this is very interesting. And I'm going to read to you from what he says. Okay. Now, Rav Hirsch is focusing on the fact that the Torah talks about the blemishes of the Kohen. The Torah talks about the blemishes of the animal. There are certain blemishes that are similar by an animal and the Kohen. There are certain blemishes that are different. But if Hirsch points out from a Torah's Kayanim, previously in Parshas Vayikra, the first time the Torah tells us Tamim, that a sacrifice has to be unblemished, that the Torah's Kayanim says the same way the animal isn't supposed to be blemished, so too the one that brings the animal, referring to the Kohen, the one who offers the animal, also shouldn't be blemished. Which means that there's some kind of, so to speak, relationship between the blemish that invalidates the animal and the blemish that invalidates the Kohen. They work together. So the verse says like this in this week's parasha. We already indicated on chapter 1, verse 3, the intimate relationship between the Kohen HaMakriv, between the Kohen that does the offering, and the carbon and the sacrifice itself, and have worked out the meaning of the bodily lack of imperfection for both. They express equally the completeness of the surrendering, which is demanded from us, and the completeness of the life, which is thereby to be gained in nearness to God. My understanding of Hirsch, and looking at part he wrote in Parshas Vayikra, is that the idea of the blemish, the invalidation of the blemish, or the necessity, the mandate for completeness, is actually from two angles. One angle is that a carbon comes from the word karev, to bring us close. The carbon is meant to be an act in which we are to be brought close to God. And that animal that's being brought is symbolic of our coming close to Hashem. And the Kohen bringing the animal is symbolic of us coming close to Hashem. If the animal were to be missing something, so the symbolism or the meaning behind giving over the animal, which is a symbolism of subjugating, giving oneself totally over to Hashem, if that animal is missing something, then that can come across as a message that says, I don't have to completely give myself over. I can hold, let's say, something back. I can give to Hashem, and I can hold back. If the animal is missing a part, then you're lacking the idea, the message of one has to completely give every aspect of their lives over to Hashem. And when the animal is complete, That is symbolic of we are completely subjugated. We're completely giving ourselves over to Hashem.
Well, this part is easy. Give me the second one.
What?
This part was easy. Tell me the second one.
With the Kohen?
Yeah.
It's the same idea. Well, a similar idea. That the Kohen who is bringing the animal forth, yeah, who is also symbolic of coming close to Hashem, if he would be blemished, then again, that would also give a message of that when giving over, that when you're trying to approach Hashem and you're giving yourself over to Hashem or giving of yourself to Hashem, you know, if he would be lacking, the same idea could come across that I don't have to completely, I don't have the message there of complete subjugation to Hashem.
The difference there is that one has a choice to which animal to pick, but he doesn't have a choice of his disability.
Okay, that's a difference, but that doesn't mean that it's not the same idea. The question here is, what's the message? What's being seen? What's being seen is, if the Kohen or the animal are missing something, then there's something missing in the message of being completely given over. That's how Rav Hirsch is saying it. And then that's one idea. Again, this is how I understand it. But then there's another idea. And the other idea is, as he says, that the bringing a complete carbon and the completeness of the life, which is thereby to be gained in nearness to God. If a whole animal, okay, which represents the whole of us, okay, is now being brought closer to Hashem, then that means that a complete life is to come close to Hashem, and when that complete life comes close to Hashem, it blossoms, it grows, it excels, it becomes elevated. Listen to this line. It is not the afflicted and the infirm, not the blind and the lame, the disfigured and crippled, the broken and the sick, for whom the Jewish altar is erected, so that weary, burdened humanity can drag itself up to it to find compassionate consolation, even miraculous healing. It is life in its completeness, in its freshness and strength, which there is to gain consecration to an active life of God-serving deeds and thereby acquire the everlasting freshness of youth and unbroken forces of life. Meaning, if this animal is damaged, is blemished, the Kohen is blemished, then you know what it gives, then you know what kind of impression it can give? Do you know what this altar is for? The altar is for healing the broken. For a broken person to come and find consolation, to find compassion. It only gives the impression that, you know who needs religion? The person with the problems. But the person who life's going okay, he doesn't need religion. Life's good, life's complete. If you don't have a life, your life is broken, your life is shattered, your life is missing, okay, come to the altar, you'll find compassion, you'll find consolation, you'll find something to make up for your loss. But that would be the message. The message could come across, do you know why you come to the altar? Do you know why you're coming close to the altar? Because, you know, life's tough, you're missing so much, so now you'll be consoled, you'll find compassion. Yet, you're in bad shape, but you know what? Come to the altar, we'll show you love, we'll show you compassion. But the message is supposed to be that a complete life, you can be complete, there can be absolutely nothing wrong with you. There's nothing in your life missing, seemingly. But that's the life that you bring close to Hashem, and that's the life that needs closest to Hashem, will be elevated, will blossom under the service of Hashem. It's the same, the idea is that again, whether it be the animal, whether it be the Kohen, the message has to be that a complete life is the life that's to be brought in front of Hashem. Now again, you know, if you're blemished, you come across to Hashem, you're as complete as anyone when it comes to trying to come close to Hashem. But the point is that if we're doing this act of symbolizing closeness, of coming close to Hashem, we'd be done with something that's lacking. Then again, the message could possibly be taken as, if you're lacking, come here, we'll take care of you. We'll try to make up for some of your loss. But that's not supposed to be the message. It's supposed to be, you can be a complete life, healthy, young, vigorous, everything's fine. That's the life that has to be come close to Hashem to gain its true completeness, to gain its true blossoming, to gain its true growth. So therefore, the idea that we have both by the animal and by the Kohen is this idea. Don't bring the blemish. He can't bring the blemish. The blemish can't do the offering because there can never be an impression that you're coming close, that the purpose of coming close is since you're lacking in your life, you'll get something made up through religion, through a sacrifice, through coming close. No, you're complete. There's nothing missing. Everything's fine. You're not missing anything in life. But that's the life that needs to come close to Hashem and become even more complete and become elevated. That's the message of the blemish. It's not about, according to Refresh, it's not about, does it look nice? It's more about, again, the symbolism that lies, the message that lies. We want to make sure that there's no misunderstanding in the message. There should not be any kind of impression that says, you know, if you're missing in life, you're, you know, Nebuch, and you have this problem, you have that problem, okay, then you come. Then come to religion. You know, it'll give you some kind of compassion, it'll give you some refuge. That's not what it is. A complete life is the life that needs to, that a complete life with all its vigor and without anything lacking, that's the life that needs to come, that needs to come close to Hashem to gain completeness. So Rav Hirsch then says something very interesting in explaining a halacha, explaining a Rambam. So the Torah here says that this the Baal Mum should not lo yakriv lakriv lechem aleikav. He shall not come close to bring an offering to Hashem. So the Rambam in the laws in Hilchas Bias Hamikdash, the laws of coming to the Beis Hamikdash. The Rambam prohibits a Baal Mum to come with a Bia Reikonis. That means, let's say a Baal Mum Kohen is not going to bring a sacrifice, but he just wants to walk up to the altar. He wants to walk around in the base in the area of Karbonis. He wants to walk around there. So, okay, listen, he is a Kohen, okay, and so he's gonna, if he's walking to the Beis Hamikdash, he's gonna, you know, sanctify, he's going to wash his hands and feet, he's going to put on the big day kohen, he's not going to bring any sacrifices, he's just going to be there. So the Rambam says, can't do that. The Torah didn't just forbid him to bring a sacrifice, it forbids him actually just to enter into the area of the Mizbeach. He can't do that. Now, Rav Hirsch asks a question that from a different writing of the Rambam, a zar, that means a non-kohen, a non-Kohen is prohibited from bringing a sacrifice. He's prohibited. If you're not a Kohen, you can't bring a sacrifice. Is there a prohibition for the non-Kohen to walk around the altar? No. You don't find that. So it's like, wow. The non-Kohen can walk around, but the blemished Kohen can't walk around. It's kind of strange. This one's a Kohen, this is not even a Kohen. He's okay to be there, and the Kohen can't be there. Says Rav Hirsch, that perhaps without explanation, we can now explain why. Because a Kohen, even if he's just walking around the Mizbeach, people relate a Kohen to the sacrifices. And if he's going to be there in the area of the altar, again, we're lacking the message of the complete life approaching the altar. We want to make it very clear that it's the complete life that's supposed to bring that is coming close to Hashem with the sacrifices. Not just the life that's missing something. So if the Kohen, he's there, he's a Kohen, he's wearing the Kohen garments, and he's walking around there, he's a Kohen. The people know he's a Kohen. So right away they relate him to the Mizbeach. And right away we can have the problem of this idea, of this misconception that the altar, the closest to Hashem, that's for people who are missing things in life. And therefore, he doesn't even walk around there. Because that message of the complete Kohen has to be clear, even just walking around there. Because any automatic association to the Mizbeach should be carrying that message of that the complete life is what a complete life needs to come close to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Every life needs to come close to the Ribbono Shel Olam. The complete life, not just the life that's incomplete, the life that's lacking. But even the life that's complete needs to come close to the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Zara, on the other hand, the non-Kohen, nobody relates him to the Mizbeach. Mm-hmm. Nobody relates him to the service. So if he walks around, so he's walking around. No one's going to go ahead and look at the Tsar and make some kind of misconception from the Tsar by walking around there. But the Kohen, on the other hand, because he is a Kohen, will automatically be related to the Oltan Mizbeach, because that's what a Kohen does. He's a Baal Mum, it's true, he's blemished. But again, if as a Kohen, he is going to be automatically related to the Mizbeach, and that again can give this misconception that the altar, the coming close to Hashem of the altar, is for people lacking. And that's not the message. The message is the complete life. A complete life is I'll use the word, even a complete life has to needs to come to that closeness to Hashem. Not only the damaged life that needs consolation and comfort, but that complete life, that everything is going well, that life has to come close to the Ribbono Shel Olam for it to grow and to blossom. Okay, so that's a discussion about this idea of Baal Mum. Okay, now, the next thing I want to talk about is what I gave you this handout about. And in this week's parasha, the Torah goes through all the holidays, and it talks about the mitzvah of Sfira, of counting the Omer, which is what we're doing right now. And during the period of the Omer, we know there is a practice of Avelus. There is an observance of mourning in which we mourn over the death of the 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva. So I'd like to read with you the Gemara in Yevamos that talks about this episode and talk about this. So we're on the top of the first page. This is the Gemara in Yevamos, Daf Samach Beis. Rabbi Akiva says that the verse should be understood as follows. If one studied Torah in his youth, he should study more Torah in his old age. If he had students in his youth, he should have additional students in his old age. As it is stated, in the morning sow your seed, what does it say? Oh, ube'erev al tanach yadecha, and in the evening, don't rest your hand. Okay? Even if in your youth you were planting seed, whether it be children, whether it be students, ube'erev, even in your old age, Don't let up. Don't say, oh, I did already these things. I produced children. I produced students. I did when I was young. When I'm old, don't need to do that. No. If you can, have more children because you don't know which ones are going to succeed. And if they both succeed, Baruch Hashem, great. The same with the students, right? Students when you're young, students when you're older, because if you don't know which ones are going to be the ones that succeed, if they both succeed, great. Now, Rabbi Akiva, the Gemara right after this brings Rabbi Akiva's personal experience and what it means that raise students when you're young and when you're older. They said by way of example, Rabbi Akiva had 12,000 pairs of students in an area of land that stretched from Geva to Antipatris in Judea, and they all died in one period of time because they did not treat each other with respect. Famous Gemara. 12,000 pairs becomes 24,000 students. And because they did not treat each other with respect, they all died. So that means Rabbi Akiva, all those students that Rabbi Akiva started off with, he lost every one of them. And what did he do? What is it? Gemara continues. And the world was desolate of Torah. Rashi says the world, Gemara says the world was desolate. Rashi explains, because look at all the Torah that was lost. Look at all the Torah that's forgotten. All these sages, all the knowledge that they had, gone. Until Rabbi Akiva came to our rabbis in the south and taught his Torah to them. Somebody had to, Rabbi Akiva now had to start over again and transmit the Torah that was once part of 24,000 students. He now had to find new students to teach them the Torah to transmit to the world.
What is south referring to?
South of Judea. This second group of disciples consisted of Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua. And these are the very ones who upheld the study of Torah at that time. Okay, so there you got it. Akiva's earlier students didn't survive. But his later students are the ones that continue the transmission of the Torah. Okay, the Gemara continues. It is taught, with regard to the 12,000 pairs of Akiva's students, the Gemara adds, it is taught that all of them died in the period from Passover until Shavuos. Rav Chama bar Abba said, and some say it was Rav Chiya bar Avin, they all died a bad death. The Gemara inquires, what is it that is called a bad death? Rav Nachman said, the Gemara calls it askara, and they call it diphtheria. I think they're calling it that because it is a throat, the Gemara describes it as a throat disease. It's a disease that starts in the stomach and goes up to the throat. Okay. So, question number one of this Gemara is, it's not nice not to have respect for one another. Why is that a reason to die? Why is that a reason to die? The Gemara says they all died in one period because not each treated each other with respect. Okay? You should definitely be respectful to one another. Why is that a reason they should all die? That's number one. The Gemara tells us that they all died from the period from Pesach until Shavuos. Why is that important? And the Gemara tells us, how do they die? From Askara. This diphtheria, this throat disease. Why is that important? So the Maharsha, in his commentary to this Gemara, explains that the sin of these Torah scholars not acting respectfully with each other was a sin of lack of respect for Torah. You know, someone may be your colleague, but if they're a great rabbi, then they deserve respect because of who they are. And if they're not getting respect, even if it's from a colleague rabbi, that is a lack of respect to Torah. So this was, the seriousness of their sin, says the Maharsha, was the lack of Torah honor. We know that's a very serious sin. Be disrespectful to a Torah scholar is a very serious sin. Because disrespect to a Torah scholar is disrespect to the Torah. So the Maharsha says that each scholar, the scholars who were not respectful to each other, they were all guilty of disrespecting Torah. Of disrespecting Torah scholars. So why did they die, says the Maharsha? Because we say about Torah, we say it in Ma'ariv every night, Kihi chayecha v'arech yamecha. Torah study is your life and the lengthening of your days. Basically, Maharsha is saying, you don't respect Torah, you don't respect life. You don't respect life, you don't have it. Now, clearly, this is something that was, we're going to say that it's clear that this was something that these scholars, because of who they were on their level, were held in such a high and under such high standards that their lack of appreciation for Torah says that they're not appreciating life, and therefore they lose their life.
But why is that nobody is asking how come all students of such great sage did not respect each other? It's just he must have done something wrong.
Or he didn't notice it, and it was that small that only Hashem noticed it. That's a good question you're asking. But I do remember somebody saying that, like, if this happened under Rabbi Kiva's, it doesn't say anywhere that Rabbi Kiva was held responsible for this. It's just an example of Rabbi Kiva losing his students and starting all over again. Nowhere do you find anybody holding Rabbi Kiva responsible for it. Which would mean that Rabbi Kiva, this was not something that noticeable. It wasn't something that anybody could, Rabbi Kiva didn't notice it. Hashem noticed it. Hashem knew it. And Hashem held them responsible. You see, this was according to what we're saying right now, this is a very slight, you know, level of disrespect. But for these Torah scholars, as great as they were, these would have been the ones continuing the Torah after Rabbi Akiva. For them not to have the respect for one another, for them not to respect the Torah of the other Torah scholar, was considered a desecration of Torah's honor. And therefore, Torah is life. You're not appreciating life. You don't deserve it. And then the Maharsha says, and why does the Torah Gemara tell us they died between Pesach and Shavuos? Why is that important to know? So he says, because Pesach and Shavuos is the healthiest season of the year. It's the best time of the year. So no one can say, oh, there must have been some kind of a plague, some kind of bacteria, some kind of virus. This is not the time for those kinds of things. It was clearly Ashkach, it was clearly Hashem's decision. He doesn't, and why the Misa of Askara? Why the death of Askara? So take a look at the next Gemara that we have here on the second page. This next Gemara, when it says on a related note, this is a Gemara in Shabbos. And the Gemara in Shabbos says, the sages taught in a Braisa that there are four signs
It's the third page?
Second page. You're on it. Okay? The sages taught in a braisa that there are four signs. A sign of sin is hidraka. Hidraka is some kind of a sickness. And I believe sin here means a sin of immorality. A sign of gratuitous hatred, meaning a sign of sin is chinam, unwarranted hatred, is jaundice. A sign of arrogance is poverty. A sign of slander of lashon hara is askara. The Gemara is saying these diseases are all a result and a sign of sin. If you have askara, what is that a sign of? Lashon hara. Says the Marsha, it must be that part of the lack of respect that they had for each other was that they spoke lashon hara about each other. Which then you'd say, did Rabbi Akiva notice it? Maybe not. Maybe not. All of them. All of them guilty of lashon hara, according to the Marsha. Which again would probably mean a level of lashon hara that probably was not noticeable to anyone, but considered lashon hara for people on their level. But again, for their level, it was lashon hara, and therefore they got this askara. Rabbi Aaron Cutler has another explanation here as to what exactly was their sin. And the way I understand what he's saying is that the problem of not honoring each other is a problem that in the sixth parak of Pirkei Avos, the Torah talks about Memches Devarim Shatara Niknes Bahen. There are 48 things. There are 48 things a person needs to acquire Torah. Acquire Torah means that when you have these 48 things, traits, forms of conduct, you now become the person who acquires Torah. You now have the merit and the ability to understand and grasp and comprehend Torah at its highest level. If you don't have these 48 things, you may come across looking very smart and very knowledgeable, but you will not be able to truly, fully acquire and comprehend the wisdom of Torah. You will not be able to completely assimilate, absorb, integrate the Torah, the wisdom of Torah, or the sanctity of Torah. Torah is not just a question of being smart and having the information in your head. There are different traits. A person has to be a certain type of person who is able now to absorb the Torah, to assimilate the Torah at the highest level, and therefore comprehend and pass it on at the highest level. One of those memeches tavar, one of those 48 ways, is called dibuk chaverim, clinging to friends, meaning that you have a friend who which you study with, who which you associate with, who which you grow with, but it's dibuk. You cling. You become connected, you become one. If these rabbis did not give each other honor the way they should have, then that means they did not unite and become one with each other the way they should have. If they didn't respect each other's learning the way they should have, then number one, it means that in some level, they're not listening to each other well enough. They're not gaining from their partners what they should be. They're not having this trait of dibuk chaverim that again, The oneness with your friend, which on a basic level is respect him, listen to him, hear him out, because that's the way you got to grow. Probably on a deeper level, the more that you have that oneness with your friend, the more that you are one with Klal Yisrael, that itself goes ahead and allows, gives you the merit to comprehend Torah. But if you're not going to be completely one at peace and respectful to another person, no matter how great you are and how smart you are, if you don't have the proper respect for another, for your friend, in this case, not just a friend, another Torah scholar, these men were supposed to be the men who are going to continue passing on the Torah from Rabbi Akiva. If those men are passing on the Torah from Rabbi Akiva, they have to be able to have the, they have to be complete in their Torah. And they cannot be complete in their Torah if they're not respectful to one another, because then they will not be able to be complete. You can't be complete unless you are respectful to your study partner, unless you're respectful to someone else's Torah and someone else's view. Okay? And therefore, it comes out that these people could not continue the transmission of the Torah from Rabbi Akiva. They couldn't. They weren't fit to do it, because they had to be able to pass on the Torah in its most complete form. That means they have to acquire Tarnet's complete form, and therefore they can pass it on. If they're not respectful to each other, they're missing what you need to be able to absorb the Torah in its complete form, and to merit to understand in its complete form. And if they couldn't do that, they couldn't pass on the Torah. They couldn't pass it on. They couldn't continue. Okay, if they couldn't continue doing what they were doing, what's going to happen to them? What needs to happen to them?
Well, they could have been fired.
Ah. So you want to say they could have been fired. Now again, who's going to fire them if Rabbi Akiva didn't realize it?
All of them, all 12,000.
It says, that's what it says.
24,000.
That means with each other. Yeah. That means with each other, right? They were all lacking in this. There was something lacking in their respect for one another. Every one of them. Okay, so you're saying, well, maybe Hashem should just find a way to, you know, why do they have to die for it? Okay. So I think, if I understand what Rabbi Aaron Cutler is saying to answer your question, again, I think, I kind of say that's what he's saying, but I think an idea that came to me what he's saying is that we find, I believe he's referring to a Rambam. There's a Rambam that says, that talks about if a person's Rebbe accidentally kills someone and has to go to a city of refuge and run away, so his yeshiva goes with him. Oh, no, the other way around. If a student kills someone accidentally, okay, a student kills someone accidentally, where the Torah says he's got to pick himself up and go to the city of refuge. Okay? Now, if he's picking himself and going to the city of refuge, that means he's leaving yeshiva. The halacha is, the Gemara says this, that a Talmud Shagala, a student goes into Galus, guess who has to go with him? His Rebbe. Which a Rebbe of mine one time said, okay, the Rambam says why? The Rambam says, because for a Torah scholar not to be able to Torah study, he has no life.
Wait, but what you just said could mean that Rabbi Akiva should have been punished the same way.
No. This is for Gallus. This is for Gallus. Okay. This is for Gallus. Okay. But he's borrowing the concept that the Rambam there says, that the Torah says the Rebbe has to go along, because a Torah scholar who doesn't have Torah has no life. And you got to give the guy life when he goes into refuge. Has no life. So the Torah scholar, Torah is life. Without Torah, there's no life. So I think what he's saying is, if Hashem would have just kind of like somehow or another made them all stop learning, they'd have no life.
Okay.
There would be no life for them.
That's a good
idea. There'd be no life. It's not an option to say, well, just somehow or another, you know, get them out of here. Get them out of the yeshiva. They have no life. Another thing I thought was, to answer your question, is that I think there is such a concept, again, I'm saying perhaps, I think there's such a concept that says that if you have a mission, Hashem gives you a mission in life, and you're not fulfilling it, you're not fulfilling your purpose, then that's a reason to say, done. Done. If a person has a mission, right? They have a specific mission. This is their purpose in life. And they're not fulfilling that purpose, then there is no more point of life. Now, it doesn't mean that everything they've accomplished, listen, all these Torah scholars, they learned a lot of Torah, right? And they all die. So what does that mean? They're not going to get reward from Hashem for all the Torah that they studied? They're going to get the reward. They're going to get the reward. But they couldn't continue living. A person who has a specific mission and is not fulfilling it doesn't have the reason for living anymore. These students, again, if they would have done what they were supposed to have done, they would have had that mission. Now they couldn't do that mission. And actually, I think I'll say it like this maybe. They could not be ones continuing the Masara. They couldn't continue it. They couldn't. They were lacking. Okay. If they would have stayed alive, what would have happened? They would have done it. Which means that they would have been the ones giving over Torah in an incomplete form. That can't happen. Now again, the point, it can't happen. So what should be? All right, so let me just get back to what I'm saying. So either we'll say the thing we said before, or the pshat is going to be that again, this was their purpose. This was their purpose. Their purpose was to give over the Torah. If now they made themselves incapable of doing it, unworthy of doing it, their purpose in life is not here anymore. And they're gone.
Going back to the 48 items, so they clearly did not attain them.
that one at least.
Well,
there are a lot of other ones that maybe they did attain, but they were missing that one.
And therefore, they were not on the right level. But if they were not on the high enough level, they maybe should not have punished that harshly.
So according to this, according to the explanation, it's not about harsh.
Yeah.
It's not about harsh.
Well,
it's more about the fact that they could not continue doing what they were doing.
No, that I actually appreciate this argument, but I'm going back to the first argument when they said, well, normally it will not be called Lashon Hara, but for
okay.
them it was. So
okay.
maybe they were not on the right level, but for them it should have.
I'm sorry, I'm just not following. What's wrong with saying that again? What's wrong with saying that they were at the level?
No, they weren't because they didn't do all 48.
You're putting two different things together. You're putting two different things together.
That's
here.
Right. So I think here we just proved that we're not on high enough level. Therefore, earlier we could not have used the argument that they were.
Well, okay. I have to think about it to see if I can answer you better. But I mean, it depends on what your approach here is, right? If the approach here is, like the Maharsha says, the Maharsha's approach is that, again, they did something that they were worthy of punishment for. They didn't have enough proper honor, then they deserve to be punished. In what way did that lack of honor manifest itself according to the Maharsha? It seems to be Lashon Hara, which is why they got Askara. Some kind of Lashon Hara there.
No warning or anything.
This is a situation where, again, you know, this was what they were held responsible for. They were great. They were people who should. They were held. They were held at this high level because this is where they should have been, and they should have realized it. And again, we said Kadosh Baruch Hu Medaktek Matzadekim Chutas Sairah. Hashem is very demanding of the righteous, which means they should realize it themselves, and they're responsible for it. But according to one explanation is, again, you know, it was subtle. It was small. But they in themselves should have realized it. You know, it's like sometimes someone on the outside can't see it, but you know it. You know it. And you should have realized it, and you should have done something about it. Okay, have a good evening.
It's remarkable that all of them.
Yeah.
Yep.
None of them realized it.
Yeah.
That's what it says.
And then